Cincinnati's sports station, ESPN 1530.
Hi, how you doing? Good afternoon. I'm Mo Egger. This is ESPN 1530. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you're having a terrific Tuesday afternoon. Paul Danner Jr. is here from The Athletic. We're going to dive into a whole bunch of off-season Bengals topics. And God knows there's 1,000 of those here on May 23rd. That coming up here in just a second. Nice Reds win last night. I think a pretty big Reds win last night, all things considered, as big as a win can be when you're in last place, but still, I thought a pretty significant win. We will get to why. There's an NFL rule change that I don't like. There's a question about the Bengals moving forward, and I'm gonna spend 5 minutes preparing you for something that I think is about to be your new reality if you are a sports fan. First things first, it's Tuesday. It's 3 o'clock, which means Paul is here. Paul covers the Cincinnati Bengals for The Athletic. You can read his work at theathletic.com. You can also hear his podcast, which is called Hear That Podcast Growlin'. And you can follow him on Twitter at Paul Danner Jr. What's going on?
What's up? How are we doing?
Doing terrific. Doing really, really well.
I'm fresh from the stadium, so yes. We've got all kinds of...
Oh, what happened today at the stadium?
The players went out to the field.
Okay.
And they did some stuff. There was some footballs were thrown. Some were punted.
Ooh.
Some were punted high and far by Brad Robbins.
Mm.
There were players out there. It was good. It was May. What are we at? May 23rd?
May 23rd.
It was the May 23rd practice.
How many of these?
That's the wrong word.
What would you call it? Workout?
Phase two workout. Yeah, because it's not technically an OTA because mm-hmm. they didn't take that step of involving things like helmets and ability to do the next level of work against other people and things like that.
When does phase three start?
Into June. You got to get into June. They're taking advantage of a couple of those, and then they're done
for like 5-6 weeks.
Yeah, then they'll have the mandatory mini camp, which is basically the thing. It's the same as the phase two or the OTAs that are going on, except you have a lever you can pull to make it mandatory if you want. So they're doing that. We'll see if it gets completed. I've done more diving and research into this process over the last day or two than I care to admit. It's fascinating. You have an access to 16 practices, essentially, that you can do at different levels. And the Bengals are using 7, which is far and away that you have 18 teams that are using the full max 16 allotment. That's 3 mandatory mini camp, 3 rookie camp, which happened, which we discussed, that really didn't happen here. And then you have 10 OTAs, which are practices with helmets, and you can do a certain amount of work against somebody else, 7-on-7, some 11-on-11, things like that. Or you can stay in phase two that they're in right now, which is no helmets. You can't work against anybody else, really. It's just like individual type of work and huddles and things like that. And they're shorter. They're only one an hour or something like that compared to later. But the Bengals are on the least. They use this offseason less than anybody in the league by a pretty wide margin.
Wow. And then training camp's going to get here in late July, and I'm sure then it's just going to be hardcore, just knock the hell out of each other.
I don't know if hardcore would be the word I would use in anything, really. Just as a matter of like philosophy, but I think they do ramp up and try to have a little bit more of a focus on
football,
pretty tough camp. Yeah, that involves football, more football things. This time of year, they're, you know, talking to players about it, and not to like sidetrack whatever topic you wanted to go into.
Oh, please, no, the floor is yours.
But it is, you know, it's a matter of. I mean, you're making friends with your players.
Right.
And you're developing trust with your players, and they know you're listening to them. This is what they want. They feel like they're trend setting in the league, and that in 3, 4, 5 years, the rest of the league will look a lot like what the Bengals are doing right now. And there's, I think, real value in that when it comes to building a connected team and team chemistry and a team that, you know, Sam Hubbard talked to me, and you might imagine you'd be probably surprised when I talked to him for this. A team that polices themselves if they don't feel like guys are staying in shape, doing the extra work on their own and being trusted. He talked about teams that babysit their players being something that is kind of almost embarrassing for those teams. But trust guys to go out, keep themselves in shape, understand what's going on, and be ready to go when it's time to go. And it certainly seems like it resonates with this group.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's rewarding the guys for doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Right? Rewarding the guys for being trustworthy enough that we can empower you to sort of, all right, we're going to go light here. When you're on your own, we trust that you're going to be, putting yourself in a position that when we really get underway here in late July, you're going to be good to go.
Yeah, and that seems to be the case. I think the area of that's hard is these coaches and everybody that analyzes these players want to see them as much as possible, particularly the young players. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that need to get the muscle memory of what it feels like to do this play in 11-on-11, whether it's special teams, whether it's an offense or defense play. And they're the ones that need the work. They're the ones that need to learn how everything goes. And they're not getting as much of that now. Mm-hmm. But, they have to focus on the meeting rooms and things like that. And you've got to give them a little bit extra, in camp. But, the question you've always asked has been, was that a reason for the slow start last couple of years? Can you connect those two things? They don't seem to think so. I mean, it was something that Zach Taylor said, I think about it logically.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't look at the way they lost those games or the fact that they were 0-2, by missing chip shot or having a long snapper get turnover.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't look at that and say, oh, this was clearly a thing that we were unprepared or not ready or lackadaisical or any of the things that you think could come into that. And so there's different conclusions to be made. Their conclusions being, I see a team that was playing great at the end of the year and had relatively good health, and so keep riding.
And that's part of it that you have to acknowledge as well, because you could say maybe the way they handled the training camp and the offseason led to them starting 0-2, but this team has enjoyed very, very good health, and you can only control so much of that. But boy, at the same time, you can't help but at least acknowledge that there is a chance that the way they handled training camp and mini camp and OTAs and all the different phases played a role in this team being healthier than most each of the last two seasons.
And being good.
Yeah.
Trust.
That helps too.
Trust between players and staff and a feeling that everyone's in this together and it's not us versus them. I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know anything about the dynamic of sled day with Mike Vrabel in Tennessee right now. Have you seen these videos? Like, I don't know. Maybe those players
love
that stuff.
There's a lot of frustrated former high school football players who love that stuff.
Yes.
Just love that stuff.
All the teams that are using every possible second and pushing, like, there's a lot that comes from that that's great, but I think from a creating your chemistry and connectivity, I mean, there is does create an us versus them when they feel like the coaches are pushing you in May, and players talk about injuries that they sustained during OTAs, whether it be, I had a hamstring thing and it never quite got right during the season, or you broke a bone. Jonah Williams lost his season during this time of year. You see it happen all the time. And I think there's a lot of players that point to that. And it's a major talking point from the PA trying to get this curtailed even further so that the rest of the league does look like what the Bengals are currently doing. But it's an interesting dynamic. Again, we talk a lot about this team, shockingly, being trendsetters in some ways in recent years and the way they've handled things differently than most other teams. And then next thing you know, you see a lot of the other teams following what they're doing. It's a copycat league. It does go that way sometimes, but this could maybe end up being the next thing.
And I'm here for it.
Yes. Or it could be the reason they start 0-3 and
won't. No, but I mean, as a general, I'm here for anything, especially with a season that's longer than it was 2 years ago. I'm here for anything which at least slightly enhances the best chance possible of all the really good players being on the field once the season really starts to get underway.
Yeah.
So I'm here for that. Because there's nothing more devastating than you lose a key guy during a period of time that doesn't matter all that much.
What are we even doing here?
Right.
Exactly. And I think that's sort of their point, is there's no reason We can't listen to sports science people. Mm-hmm. We can't understand how we can and can't be pushing people, understand what we the work they need to get done. And what Zach Taylor said when I asked him about it was like, I really learned. It was a lesson he didn't expect to learn from the Super Bowl season when they did it because of just everyone was exhausted playing into mid-February.
Right.
And they changed it because of that. But they came out of it and said, we got all the work done that we wanted to get done in that amount of time. And the players loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And so why wouldn't you say, okay, maybe this is what I want to be about? It wasn't something that he wanted to be when he was 25 years old and thinking about being a coach. Like, I'm going to be a coach that takes it easy. It was something that he watched unfold and said, you know what? I think that is actually the right way to do it. And we can get everything we need to done. And build a lot, get a lot of other positives in the process. And so I think it's kind of who they are, where they're at. It's an advantage of having a veteran team,
mm-hmm.
having a coaching staff with the same coordinators mm-hmm. for somehow five straight
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
He was like, you know, if I had a new coaching staff, you would never see me wasting a minute of the
right.
offseason program. You would be all in every minute you can get. You need that. At this point, they have the luxury of being able to do it this way. Because of the system staying the same, so many such a good veteran core where you know everybody's going to be getting their work.
You wrote about the terms and figures that matter most.
Oh man!
As we talk about
I'm
Joe
sorry,
Burrow's,
I stomped on that topic.
Hmm?
I didn't. I mean, no. I mean, like I thought. You probably wanted to start with that.
Well, I mean,
and I just went back into this stupid topic.
The beauty of what we do here is, you know, sometimes you can map out some stuff, and then the show just naturally, organically, just goes down another path, and that's what happened there. And I like it.
Oh, okay.
This isn't.
But we always end up on Joe Burrow's contract at some point.
We have to.
Yeah.
We have to.
Sure.
Because I'm gonna throw at you a hypothetical that a lot of people don't want to entertain.
Okay.
Next. He's Paul Danner Jr. with The Athletic, here till 4 o'clock. I'm here till 6. My name is Mo Egger, 17 minutes after 3 o'clock. This is ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. 22 minutes after 3, this is ESPN 1530. I'm Mo Egger. Paul Danner Jr. is here, covering the Cincinnati Bengals during Phase 2 of the offseason workout program
mm-hmm.
for The Athletic. Go to theathletic.com, and you can read Paul's work, which includes... I think something that you should bookmark for whenever Joe Burrow signs his contract extension, he goes through the numbers and the figures that matter whenever that deal gets done. I found this to be educational.
You mentioned it. It is a matter of, yeah, bookmark this. You know why? Because there's going to be a million times where things like today happen where somebody starts to talk about the Bengals are trying to sign Joe Burrow. Breaking news, right?
That was a thing today on ESPN.
Apparently.
We will have the audio for you in the 4 o'clock hour.
Apparently, this is news, I guess. And so what we can do now, I just wanted to make sure I had something in place that can be a retweet with just the finger point
right,
or something
yes.
like that
mm-hmm.
of like, this is still here. This is still what to keep in mind when people start talking about the numbers and signing and anything tangentially connected to it, which is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it has ripple effects across. There's really no one it doesn't touch.
So here's my question for you. Because you do reference in the piece Burrow and the ripple effect, specifically as it pertains to T. Higgins and down the road, Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah.
After going through this exercise, do you think it is less likely or more likely that each of those three players eventually sign second contracts with the Bengals?
I think it's about what I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it changed much.
Okay.
In you know, there's people like Andrew Brandt who think it's a ridiculous excuse.
Go ahead and get it done. Yeah.
There's no reason.
I like Andrew's way of thinking.
You should be able to not sign your best players just because you're paying a quarterback. That's a crazy way to talk. And you have the majority of your roster on rookie contracts. You know, you talk about you have 20 guys making more than $1.5 million this year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of guys that are just making the minimum. There is plenty of room when you start getting up to ways to structure it and figure things out. It can be worked. The cap can be accounted for. It's a lot of cash.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of money. There's no question. It's a matter of philosophy. And I think that's what this will end up coming down to. And I thought that before you really dive into some of this stuff. And I still think that now. I think that's still the case. You know, you'll talk to people, talk about how hard it is to do and how much you will have to give up. I don't think it's different than we debate this offseason, okay? So Von Bell, Hayden Hurst, all the guys that you saw go elsewhere, okay? That we, Samaje Perine, that we discussed, or Orlando Brown, okay? It's all a matter of how you want to spend that money, and if you do it one way, you can do it that way. What does $25 million going to T. Higgins get you? It gets you T. Higgins. Mm-hmm. If you don't, they're not going to not use it.
Yeah.
It's going to go to something like four mid-tier defensive products. Like they built the defense before. Mm-hmm. Or maybe that's on the offensive side of the ball. There's just a lot of other ways that it can go. I get it wanting to go to Higgins and Chase and Burrow and keeping it together. And they're going to try to do that.
Yeah.
They want to sign their own guys. It's a priority. Whether they can or not, if there's anything we've learned about this team, and you should know by now, they're not going to go over what they believe the value to be and what they feel like that player is worth. They think T. Higgins is worth a lot. We know that. They're, I'm sure, willing to pay all of these guys if they can find ways to make it happen. That doesn't mean it's going to. And if they know it's not going to at the deadline they set, they're going to move on and find plan B or C or one they didn't even know was in existence, just like Orlando Brown.
Right.
They're going to find ways to make it work, knowing that when you have Burrow, he has the ability to make everything work.
So I want T. Higgins here.
Sure.
Every Bengals fan does.
Why would you not?
Of course. T. Higgins is a terrific player. He's been a part of this team's success over the last couple of seasons. You are crazy if you don't want T. Higgins on your football team. I want T. Higgins on the football team. But if things get to a point where it just doesn't happen long term, I think the Bengals are going to be okay. Like, I think this has now gotten to the point that when we talk about it, it's like, if they can't keep the big three together, fold the franchise. If T. Higgins leaves, and nobody wants him to, but let's say for the sake of argument that they can't get a deal done and T. Higgins at the end of the season departs via free agency. I have Joe Burrow in his prime. I'm about to re-up with Ja'Marr Chase. I have a pretty good intact offensive line. I have enough quality pieces on defense, especially if some of these guys in year two and maybe even in year one materialize into quality NFL players. I've got my franchise quarterback. Look, they might not go into next season regarded as bona fide AFC North favorites like they are right now. You might say, okay, well, what are they going to do to fill the void left by T. Higgins? I'll have some money to spend, a 2024 wide receiver draft class that people are already slobbering over, a quarterback that all sorts of dudes are going to want to come play with. I feel like if it happens, we shrug our shoulders and go, next. And because you have Joe Burrow, they'll figure it out.
If there's ever a position in the NFL that a player is going to want to come play,
yes,
you're going to win any competition for somebody, it's a player to come be the number two receiver,
yes,
with Joe Burrow opposite Ja'Marr Chase.
Yes.
It's one of the most coveted spots in the entire league. So if you thought getting Irv Smith was a deal, like, you can get a really good, if it comes down to it and you're like, got to go into free agency, didn't want it to end this way, you are going to get an incredible deal on a probably a quality number two. Will he beat T. Higgins in his prime? Maybe, maybe not.
Right.
But you're also getting that plus two to three other players.
Yeah.
As the opposite of that spend. So the point is, there's still plenty of talent. You're not going to lose the talent. It's just a matter of how you spend it. And, you know, you worry more so about the depth concerns, and that was something in the piece I wrote that Eric Eager and Brad Spielberger pointed out, is that, you know, and the numbers show this. I mean, we've not seen teams spend, and I ran back the last 10 years on the QB and wide receiver room together, a total spend of above 30-35%. That's always the very top. I mean, the Bengals would have to break those records.
Mm-hmm.
To if now this they can find creative ways to spread it out over years and rolling. And that's why we got in all the other stuff. So there's ways around it. But when you just look at the core concept of $100 million is what you're kind of per year on average paying these guys, those numbers become those numbers at a certain point. And you got to get creative for them all to work, or else you're into the 40, 45, 50% mode. And you're talking about really astronomical figures that we haven't seen happen a lot. There are creative ways to handle that and ways that you can make it work. But it does keep you from maybe adding some depth that you would like. I mean, I say this all the time. Like, think of it, and I'm not putting players, turning players into numbers because they're not, but you have to think about them through people's eyes. Like, the Bengals spent what? Mike Hilton, Von Bell, Chidobe Awuzie, Jermaine Pratt, or T. Higgins.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Their numbers add up to the same.
Right.
So you can do that, or you can have your star receiver. I mean, the way the league is going, if you have an incredible passing attack, you win games, you play late into the season, you have a chance to win a championship. I'll hear that argument all day. It totally makes sense. I'll hear the other one too.
Sure.
It's not some, like you said, it's not some like end of the world, sell the franchise situation here.
And if I felt any different, then I would look at the quarterback and go, I don't want to pay him what they're going to pay him. I got the wrong guy. Like, I want T. Higgins to be a Bengal. Like, I am here for throw the money at T. Higgins, pay Joe, pay Jamar, and let Duke Tobin figure out the rest and carry forth with the blueprint that they've already sort of outlined, which is we're going to just need young talent that's cheap on defense. I'm here for that. But if suddenly Duke has this big boatload of money that he can go spend elsewhere in the roster, and they've got to figure out a way to replace T. Higgins, I think they're going to be okay. I think they're going to be,
and look,
I think this is a great place to be in.
I mean, look at great quarterbacks. I mean, that's what you're paying, you know, $500 million, whatever, for Joe Burrow.
Sure.
Because if Patrick Mahomes loses Tyreek Hill, he's able to keep it rolling and keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
If any great quarterback lose, you see them cycle through, create great receivers, right?
Sure.
Like, I mean, there's throughout the history of this league, you've seen great quarterbacks make these players come up and turn into great receivers. That can be part of it. And it can go the other way. But with Burrow, I think, you know, I mean, look, Ja'Marr Chase missed 4 games last year and the teams went off, right?
Mm-hmm.
You now, everyone loves Trenton Irwin.
Yes.
You didn't know who Trenton Irwin was.
Right.
Well, guess what? Turns out he looks pretty good when he's able to work with Burrow and they can develop chemistry and make it go. It's not saying that that's a long, that you can succeed in the big picture. And at a certain point, you know, stars win big games. And at a certain point, you got to throw it up to T. Higgins in Kansas City and trust that he's going to go get one. I get all that. But it's not like we haven't seen other teams, other franchises, this team, this quarterback, not have top receivers and still keep right on going.
I'm thinking like August 2nd.
Okay.
The T. Higgins deal is not done, and you're at camp, and I'm sitting in here, and you're tweeting about Andre Yosavash, and he's had like a 6-catch afternoon, and then I got like 3 segments of topics about how this guy's going to replace T. Higgins. Here's the snag. This is why the Bengals.
This is it.
I'm ready for this.
Next. Yeah. That's what happens next. And that's fine. And you'll be ready. You're ready for it.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
ready.
You've got preparation.
Ready.
You've
counting on it.
It's basically your life.
Sadly so. 26 away from 4 o'clock. Are you ready to talk about the 2023 Ring of Honor class?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Good, because we're going to do that next on ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station.
Like ESPN 1530, Cincinnati's sports station.
Sports updates, a service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life. KelseyChev.com. Reds and Cardinals again tonight after last night's walk-off Cincinnati win. TJ Friedl is back off the injured list. Will Benson sent to Louisville. Speaking of Louisville, the Louisville Bats have Twitter melting right now because they released a lineup for their game tonight and Ellie De La Cruz isn't in it. Just do what you want with that information. Graham Ashcraft and Adam Wainwright. Tonight's pitcher is 640. First pitch, 700 WLW. Also tonight, Florence is at Washington. FC Cincinnati continues play in the U.S. Open Cup. The round of 16 tilt tonight against the New York Red Bulls is being staged in West Harrison, New Jersey. That starts at 7:30. The winner of that game will take on either Pittsburgh or Columbus in a couple of weeks. According to John Rothstein of CBS Sports, the Xavier Musketeers will play the Purdue University Boilermakers at Mackey Arena in the 2023 Gavitt Games between Big East and Big Ten teams. NBA tonight, Game 4, Eastern Conference Finals, Miami and Boston. Heat lead 3-0. NHL Stanley Cup playoffs tonight, Western Conference Finals, Vegas up 2-0 on Dallas with the Stars hosting Game 3 this evening. Paul Danner Jr. is here from The Athletic.
What's up?
Who should go in the Bengals Ring of Honor?
Well, I got to say, I mean, I think it's Chad's. I thought I was kind of on board with Chad last year.
Likewise. Nothing against Isaac Curtis.
No, I did. It was close. I mean, yeah. I think you could make a really good argument either way. It's what these are debates. So I would say Chad. I would start there and probably Boomer. I mean, I think it's you can go a number of different directions. Mm-hmm. I mean, Boomer won MVP, played quarterback, yes. Went to the Super Bowl.
Right.
Like, has been an ambassador for the franchise.
Those are still two of the most recognizable figures mm-hmm. in the history of the franchise.
Yeah. Yeah. And deserve for that. So that's probably where I would start. I look at somebody like Tim Crumry.
Mm-hmm.
And he, to me, I don't think I hear a lot of talk. Maybe I'm not seeing it,
mm-hmm.
but I don't hear a lot of talk about him. And I think, I mean, what Tim Crumry was just underappreciated and under-discussed because people spend a lot of time talking about, you know, Sam Wyche in the offense and
or with
Icky.
Tim, they focus on the injury. The one injury he suffered.
The one thing he had. Well, the reason right. it was such a significant injury is because he was an absolute game changer for the organization for a number of years. And I always looked at him as a face of the organization, right? I mean, mm-hmm. he really, in so many ways, was. I mean, he defined a lot of what those defenses were about. So he's somebody who I would, you know, sort of low-key have higher up on my list or closer to getting in.
Many years ago, I was at a UC basketball game. This is many years ago. This is like late 90s. Maybe 2001, somewhere in that range. Tim Crumry is at the game, and he's walking through the concourse, and somebody recognizes him and says to him, "How's the leg?"
How's the leg?
I can't imagine how many times this poor man had to answer that question from well-meaning people. How do you think the leg was? He broke it maybe a dozen years prior. He's okay.
He's walking around.
Walking around at a basketball game, having a good time.
Yeah, that's unfortunate when something that awful is what now you're remembered for.
Right.
I choose to remember him now for always in jeans and a cowboy hat, like all the time, no matter what the situation. It is a very versatile, you know, fashion philosophy if you need it, because it can dress up, it can dress down. If it's who you are, maybe the jeans get a little nicer or the boots get nicer. The hats already gets your respect. That's why I like that about Tim.
I mean, he's going to be in one day.
Sure.
For me, now, I wish they were doing this a little bit differently, and I think I made the same case to you last year, what they should have done, and I think this is fun that they do this every year because it creates interesting discussions and fun debates, and it's great, but what I wish they would have done is said, we're putting Dave Lapham in the Ring of Honor. Mm-hmm. He's going in, and now we're going to vote for the other two people because I'm voting for Lap.
Yeah.
And so, sorry, Boomer, my childhood hero. My favorite all-time player gets punted again because I think Lap should go in first. So I think when you have a figure like that, you should go ahead and say, this guy's been connected to our franchise for like five decades almost. We're putting this guy in the Ring of Honor. He's going in. We're not going to have him subject to this ballot that includes players whose playing careers were maybe more prolific. We're putting Dave in because of the entire body of work, the total package. And then you could vote for two other guys. That's what they should have done.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's not fair to compare him as an on the field, which I feel like is what you're supposed to be doing with
right.
this, right?
Right.
I mean, is it about organizational impact,
which is, you know, part of the reason, maybe it is. That's part of the reason why I've leaned into Chad.
Sure.
And would do so with Boomer partially as well. I'm with you. I think you have to have some sort of, like, he's in a class all his own.
Yes.
In many different ways. And so it's not really fair to say, like, oh, Lapham, the player, it's the person.
It's the figure. It's the ambassador.
Mr. Bankel. That's what it is. And so he, I'm with you. I think he needs to be in a whole separate conversation and not try to put him in there with everybody else.
And there's precedent because that's what they did with Munoz. Now, they clearly kind of in a class by himself. But, I mean, they said Anthony's going to be in the first ever class along with Paul Brown, understandably so. And then you're going to vote for two others. And I thought the voters got it right. I think you do the same thing with Lapp where you're like, you know, look, yes, he was a good player, played for a long time, was on a Super Bowl team, played a bunch of different positions on the offensive line. But we're not going to have you hold up his playing resume versus Corey Dillon's or Boomer's or Chad's or Tim Crumrise or any number of guys because of the figure he has been. He's kind of a class unto himself. And so he's going in, pick the other two. And then that to me would be best.
Yeah. I mean, if you had a random sampling of, you know, 10,000 Cincinnatians and you gave them that list and said, do you know who this person is?
Mm-hmm.
Lapp would be like probably maybe number one.
Maybe.
I mean,
maybe.
Like, I mean, when you're him and Munoz, like when I think of those two together would be up there, you know, as recognizable as of people of anyone who has any knowledge of the Bengals at all. And I think if that's the case, then that's someone that deserves their name up there.
I'm going to ask you about something the NFL is not doing because I don't understand why.
Okay.
Next on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
Hey, Alexa, what's going on in the NFL?
Getting ESPN 1530 from iHeartRadio.
The answer to that question is they've changed the kickoff rule again. Paul Danner Jr. is here covering the Bengals for The Athletic, theathletic.com. Phase two of the offseason program. In-depth coverage. So Jay's staying down there today and just...
We were down there. We were both down there.
I know, but I mean, you had to come up here.
I did.
Does he stay? And then
no,
there's going to be like a special
right
phase
it's
two
over
section
everybody
tomorrow
left. Yeah, no
in The Athletic.
Everyone, players, coaches, everybody leaves.
The NFL has changed the kickoff rule. The ball is going to be placed at the 25-yard line if teams make a fair catch inside the 25-yard line on kickoffs. This is what they do in college. Why don't they just get rid of kickoffs?
I mean, it seems like they're trying to go that direction. I mean, the coaches and the players hate this. This isn't a thing like...
Albert Breer tweeted, special teams coaches unanimously
hate
this.
Like, capital H.
What is their what is the basis of their opposition?
So here's the basis of the opposition. They felt like they worked very hard to make this safer a few years ago, about 5 years ago. They changed the rules for how the kickoff operates. And because they saw the rise in concussions and all, and everyone wants player safety. Everyone wants there to not be as many issues on this play.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, everyone wants to continue to be a part of the game. Special guys who make their living on special teams do. Obviously, special teams coaches in general. It's an exciting play, all that stuff. It's not about having more of them. The issue is partially about you're going to backtrack on the progress that they made. They'd made the changes and concussions went down.
Mm-hmm.
Those injuries went down. Well, now, if you add this, the unintended consequence can be that actually you might see more kickoffs returned for this reason. If you fair catch, if you signaled a fair catch and you drop it, that is like a punt, a muffed punt, right?
Right.
The offense takes over at that spot. So if you are fair catching a kickoff at the 3 and you drop it, first and 10 at the 3. Okay? So if you're playing against somebody who's you've seen on tape, their guy, he's taking these fair catches, you think you're going to kick it into the end zone? It's going to the same place.
Right.
It's going to the 25 either way. Why wouldn't you, if you trust your coverage team, and you probably do against somebody who doesn't trust himself enough to be a returner, you just kick it and see if he drops it. And if he does, guess what? Now you've buried him in their side of their own.
Right. You're making him make a catch.
Or, and a lot of those, he won't fair catch it, and they'll bring it out because you'll get more of these short kicks. You'll get less of the bomb touchbacks. You're actually creating more kicks. And on those, the collisions are still happening as guys run down the field mm-hmm. before the fair catch. A lot of times the ones that are bang deep into the end zone, you don't get as much of that because everybody sees it. You see the arms go out early. Yeah. They do that so yeah. that everyone stops. And so the thought is that this can backtrack on some of the progress they felt they had made. And people, what? They point to the spike in concussions last year.
Mm-hmm.
Why did concussions spike last year? Because they were diagnosed more often.
Mm-hmm.
We saw at Paycor Stadium.
Right.
That it changed the dynamics of things, right? I mean, there were just a lot more concussions mm-hmm. that were diagnosed. And that's it's a scary thing. And player safety is important. I think a lot of their point is, A, maybe you are kind of, you're just changing the kickoff entirely and you're changing, like, why are you doing this? And two, you might be actually making it more dangerous.
I guess for me, if I'm the kicking team, why not just kick it to the 15? And now the guy's got to make a decision,
mm-hmm.
right? Am I going to fair catch this? Or am I going to try to run it past the 25-yard line? I'm making him make a decision, but now the collisions are going to start 15 yards upfield. The collisions are going to start in a more compact space.
Yes.
I think you saw some of this with how they reimagined the rule before, the mortar kick, where you're going to try to kick it inside the 5. Now just, I'm going to kick it to the 15, make you make a decision.
Yeah, and that's fine. I just think it's there aren't many fans there in the league, and it's not because they aren't concerned about player safety. It's that they feel like they did a real deep analysis for a number of years about why these things were happening, and this is going to bring a lot of those back into play.
Yeah.
And some progress that maybe they had been made, while at the same time, you know, messing with this play yet again. So, yeah. It's a one-year trial, so we'll see if it goes the way of what the instant replay on pass interference that blew up in their face or whatever, and they said one-year trial and punt.
Right.
But most of the time, one-year trial leads to adoption, so we'll see how that plays out. If it does end up being a thing where we see more actual returns or concussions or anything, but nobody's very happy about it. That's for sure.
Not happy about this. I'm not happy that Thursday night games can be flexed either.
No, they're definitely not happy about that either. No, nobody's happy about that.
Nobody likes that. Now, they did extend the window. 28 days, you got to decide if you're going to move a game. So, seems to me that not a lot of games are going to be moved weeks 13 through 17. I know ticket buyers in this league don't matter. It is a gigantic middle finger to people who are trying to plan out when they're going to go to a game.
Absolutely. I mean, the concept that, 28 days in advance. Yeah, because no one buys their hotels and flights
right.
more than a month in front of a game.
Dude, on schedule release night, we're doing a show at Bad Tom Smith. There were people booking their travel that night.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is a little bit more difficult, including for that Jacksonville game, which theoretically could be flexed out. I don't think it'll happen because I think it's going to be a good game, but still.
Yeah, and the Thursday. And it's not like it's not possible. I mean, you pick any of these teams. I mean, if you were last year, if you saw a Broncos game in week 16, you better believe after about week 7, the league was like, get Russ right. and the Broncos out of there.
Right.
Anyway, so to the concept of them to say that we don't think it'll be judiciously used. We probably.
Whatever.
Yeah, right, man. Like, mm-hmm. and
you're paying Amazon. Amazon's paying $1 billion to broadcast Thursday Night Football.
And you're throwing, you know, even more another short week, mm-hmm. one that you didn't anticipate and didn't plan for. On top of everything, yeah. I mean, look, the TV broad. They're gonna run the show. I mean, that's what we're. If you pay to run the show, you're gonna run the show, and that's what happens.
I get it, but as somebody who I like going to football games, they're making it more difficult to plan to go to football games, and this has been the case for 17 years when flex scheduling started.
It's true,
and so it's becoming more and more difficult to, especially if you have other things that you have to sort of figure out so you could attend the football game. It's I don't like it.
No, when you start moving days,
yeah.
Even the Monday flex.
Yes.
I mean, that's a...
It's a middle finger.
It is. You get those.
I get many.
You've had some.
I've had some in my life.
Yeah.
This has been awesome as always.
Yes.
Does phase 3 start next week?
No.
Oh.
No.
I can't wait till it does.
More phase two? It's going to be great, yeah.
All right, we'll be reading your coverage of phase two in The Athletic.
Lots of good stuff coming on
that. TheAthletic.com, and make sure you follow Paul on Twitter, at Paul Danner Jr. It's coming up on 4 o'clock. The Reds won last night. A walk-off Nick Senzel sacrifice fly in the bottom of the 10th inning scores the magic runner. The Reds win. We'll talk about it next. It's 4 o'clock. I'm Mo Egger. This is ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station.